The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Could the government bulk buying of apartments in advance, this is off the plans as it were, kickstart the building of new units and positively impact the housing crisis? Would that render any talk of tax breaks for developers moot? Well, to get insights into this, I'm joined now by Fianna Fáil Senator in Dublin Central, spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage, Mary Fitzpatrick, and architect, project manager, conservation architect, certified passive house designer, Mel Reynolds. Good morning and welcome to you both. So we'll go to you, Mary, from the political point of view. Is this a good idea to buy off the plans from developers who have yet to develop plans for which they have planning permission?
There's a lot of plans in that. Good morning, Pat, and good morning to your listeners. Look, I suppose you have to consider all of these suggestions in the context of the overall Housing for All plan. And Housing for All is a 10-year plan that is a state-led plan to use state-owned lands, have local authorities, approved housing bodies, and private developers deliver a mix of social, affordable to purchase, affordable cost rental, and private homes. The local authorities, to be fair to them, you know, we all accept, I think everybody accepts generally, that we're coming out of a decade of undersupply of housing. Housing for All a year in is making good strides. The target for last year was 24,600 homes, and it looks like the exit figure at the end of 2022 will be 28,000. So that's positive, but it's not enough, and everybody accepts.
Okay, so this idea that's been thrown around the place, that the government could actually look at the plans as yet unbuilt that developers have, and they will cry the poor mouth. They'll give all sorts of excuses why they haven't built them. And the government says, well, OK, we'll give you a guaranteed price for these units. Off you go and build. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it could work. The concept, I think, as it's been spoken about, would not actually be central government doing it. I would imagine it'll be a combination of local authorities in large urban areas, like the four Dublin local authorities, working with probably the Land Development Agency, which has a remit to deliver affordable homes and, most importantly, affordable cost rental homes, which is a new model of secure long-term affordable rental for people who don't qualify for social housing because they're above the social housing income thresholds. I would imagine that's how it would work. I would also imagine that in purchasing those homes or in funding the building of the homes, then the homes would be made available as either as a affordable cost rental or affordable purchase homes.
Okay, now currently there are 70,000 unbuilt units with planning permission.
The sector say that there's a big viability issue around the building, particularly of apartments. So that the last figures from the SCSI were from 2020, and obviously there's been very significant construction inflation since then, but they estimated the cost of building apartments anything from about 350,000 up to in excess of 600,000. They would be for larger, bigger.
Yeah, your line is breaking up a lot. I'll come back to you if we can improve that line. Mel Reynolds, you know, you've heard what Mary's been saying in part. What do you think of this idea? 70,000 units unbuilt with full planning permission. The government should write the checks.
Good morning, Pat and Mary. How are you? I suppose there's three points to this. The first one is that the government are sort of doing this already and have been for a number of years. The social housing program is very reliant on the purchase of new homes from the private sector. So we've seen over the past, for the lifespan of Rebuilding Ireland onwards, really, we've seen something like 2-to-1 for every one house that's being built by a local authority for social housing or an AHB. Two are being purchased from the private sector. So, you know, the purchasing of new homes from the private sector they've been doing for a number of years and at scale. I think in a typical year, you could be looking at between 3,000 or 4,000 new homes being purchased from the private sector. So they're already doing it. The second point about it is that I suppose politically, the government in a way have no choice because in a typical year, you're going to see maybe 7,000 or 8,000 new bills are purchased by non-households. That's a mixture of funds, private funds, approved housing bodies and local authorities, and now the LDA are getting involved as well. So that breaks down around about half and half. So if the fund, if the market has gone soft for funds, and if they're withdrawing from the market, as we were being told they are, who's going to step in and keep that demand going, and that's going to be the state. So in a way, the state have no choice but to step in with the checkbook from that respect to keep the numbers. But I suppose the third point is, should we be doing this at all? You know, I mean, on the one hand, you've got 70,000 planning permissions on one side. Quite a lot of those could be value-add exercises that were never intended to be built and may not be suitable in terms of their arrangement now. But on the other, we have our carbon commitments for 2030. And we know the Green Building Council brought out their towards 2030 policy statement a few weeks ago. In that, their recommendation was that we shouldn't be building any more than about 21,000 new builds, and the balance of 13 or 14,000 dwellings required each year to get up to 35,000 should come from a mixture of existing vacant homes and vacant upper floors or commercial buildings that have been repurposed. If we concentrate on something like apartments, which are very carbon hungry, we're going to completely blow our... That's even if we reduce the embodied carbon, that's the carbon required to build the houses or apartments. If we... Even if we reduce that by half, we're still going to exceed our targets for 2030. So the only way, so in a way, what the government are proposing is on a collision course with our carbon budgets for 2030. So the government are in a real bind here. I was surprised that they didn't latch on to the Green Building Council report and say, do you know what we're going to do? We're going to concentrate on the 166,000 vacant homes that we have around the country from the last census. Roughly about half of those are surplus to where we should be. You need a certain amount of vacancy, around 4%. So we actually have the guts of 70,000 existing vacant properties around the country that are already built, that could be turned around very quickly. The only difficulty with it is it's bitty. It's not a big bang. You can't make an announcement and say we're going to do 1,000 here, 1,000 there. You need hands on deck to do it because it's messy. But we have them already.
One of the worrying things that you mentioned in passing there was the fact that some of the planning permissions which are unbuilt were simply added value exercises. You know, they were never intended to be built. It's called flipping in the business, where you get a piece of land, you get planning permission for it, which costs you a certain amount because you've got to pay your architects and all the rest of it and the planning costs. And as soon as you have planning permission, you put it back on the market with a huge added value. But you, as a developer, never intended to build the damn thing at all.
Well, I mean, there are very. I suppose it's like wholesale and retail is the best analogy to it. You know, you have some. Landowners aren't just one sort of group of people who are all singing off the same hymn sheet. You've got farmers who own land. You've got landowners who've owned it for years. You also have people that get involved and de-risk that particular portion. And then you've got your sort of builders who will either buy land years in advance or buy land with permission because they know it de-risks the process. So, critically, in terms of I think one of the underlying problems we have here that this is pointing a big red flag to is the fact that development finance is really hard to get for anything over about 10 or 20 units unless you've got a lot of cash in your back pocket like some of the bigger players have. So the only way you can get funding from the private sector is to de-risk your development by buying it. So this is what the government are doing, is saying, okay, we have a problem, let's de-risk it by buying in advance or forward funding. Great. The problem with that is we're in a high inflationary environment, so the price you agree today is going to be very different from the price in 6 months. And one of the challenges the government will have is construction cost inflation and how quickly you can adapt to that. And can you? And we know there are problems in the wider industry with that at the moment, and that will affect a lot of the different policies they have in place at present. But it's, you know, the flipping thing has always been there, and there may even be schemes now where people do intend to build them, but if they're not viable as apartments, they need to go back in as, say, lower-rise, high-density housing, which is another model that hasn't really been looked at or focused on by policymakers in the past 4 or 5 years. So the problem with that is looking at maybe 2 or 3 years trying to get planning permission at the moment. So a lot of these things are tricky. We had this back in 2012, 2013, where there was an awful lot of sites that had planning permission for high-density apartments that were effectively useless because it didn't make any sense to build. If you got the site for free and built out, you'd make a loss. So if that's the way the market goes due to construction input prices, we need a different type of building. So
now, you saw that study by the Land Development Agency, which suggested that, like for like, here we are paying hugely more than they're paying in Europe. And they didn't seem to have a good analysis as to why that was the case. So is it just that we are a high-cost economy? We pay our workers too much. We pay too much for materials. We allow suppliers to gouge us all the time. Is that the reason?
It's probably a mixture of a number of those reasons. I would be inclined to think that we pay our workers too little. And one of the problems we have with affordability is we haven't had wage price inflation that matches what happened in house prices, for example. So, you know, this is one of the issues we have, is we probably need to see things settle down for a little bit and for wages to go up a bit more than they have been. And I know they're going up by about 4% at the moment, but that's not matching inflation. There is, you know, we're an island country. We know there's any of the comparisons we've done in terms of costs, we compare very favourably with other locations. We do have some high costs, and also the difficulty with being on an island is you can't drive down the road across the border to a different country and get your timber, your concrete or your steel at a cheaper price. It doesn't work like that, and we're a smaller economy. And also it's much more expensive to live here, and it's much more expensive to, you know, in terms of living costs, and we pay good wages.
Having seen your work in action, the Passive House, Mel, the idea of the way we build at the moment and, you know, the carbon that's embodied in concrete and all the rest of it, is there another way? Using different construction techniques, not traditional to Ireland, using a lot more timber in the construction that would lower the embodied carbon, even in apartment blocks. And I'm not talking about 20-storey apartment blocks. I'm talking about the kind of apartment blocks you see on the outskirts of every city and town in Denmark, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in Germany.
Oh, there is, absolutely. I mean, you have modern methods of construction. You've got volumetric construction. One of the lowest embodied carbon figures I've seen that really caught my eye was actually a dwelling done by Dunleary Rathdown County Council in 2019. And I think it was Lydan, a pretty innovative Irish company. They would be useful to get on, actually, if you could. And they supplied that, and I think it was something like less than a third of the 2030 target, REBEN or RAEI target for embodied carbon. So they were able to, and again, that was primarily timber. They minimized the use of steel. They actually don't have there wasn't a ground floor slab in that. There's no concrete in the ground floor. But again, there are other ways we can look at that using conventional construction. You can look at, for example, you can use hollow blocks. They use a third less cement. You can use GGBS cement, which is using recycled material, 50% of that, you can reduce your cement content. That's a really good product. You can also look at going FSC certified timber, which is sustainably sourced timber. So just by doing what we do in a better way, and also by trying to right size what we're building instead of building, you know, houses that have a whole rig of en suites, do you really need them? Do we need the extra bedroom? I think the Green Building Council had worked out that there was some enormous carbon saving just by right-sizing houses to a reasonable size, as opposed to
We talk about timber, but we had Don Loreen of Ecosem on recently, and they've made some scientific breakthroughs in terms of the manufacturing of concrete, which would change the picture dramatically. So, you still need concrete maybe in some applications, and there is one company that can help reduce the carbon. I'll go back to Mary. Mary Fitzpatrick, Fianna Fáil Senator. Some of the texts coming in, I would not trust developers. Maybe the government should set up their own building outfit. I've lived in an apartment for 16 years, just myself and my wife, and I'll tell you this, they are not suitable for bringing up a family. And also, a lot of residents don't understand the concept of management fees, etc. But, you know, developers, they get planning permissions, and how they manage to do it, I don't know, for family apartments that are not fit for families.
Yeah, so not a number of issues there. I mean, I suppose the local authorities and the Land Development Agency are the government in terms of delivering and building homes. In terms of apartments for family living, we don't have a culture of it traditionally here. But it is important to note that about 80% of the housing need, let's say in Dublin, which is the largest local authority, is for one and two bedroom homes. So there's a huge need for one and two bedroom homes. And as Mel said there is a significant amount of vacancy, and that's why
Hang on a second, Mary. I don't like this idea because, you know, I've been to continental European towns and cities where you do have more than one and two bedroomed homes in the heart of the city.
Yeah.
In other words, you see children walking around on the pavements. If we concentrate on only building one and two bedroomed apartments, there will be no children in the inner city. There will just be transient adults.
Yeah,
you know, as they move through life and then they have families and they have to go to the burbs to, you know, they abandon their city lifestyle in order to have a family. That's not real living.
Yeah, I live in the city. I've lived in apartments. I don't live in an apartment now, but I agree with you. And nobody is suggesting that we would not build apartments for family living or for, you know, for three bedroom apartments. There's a paucity of it, though. There are very few of them. And any of the developments that are being developed will include some three bedrooms. But the point I was making is that 80% of the housing need is for one and two bedrooms. And that's just a fact. So the majority of the units that will be built to meet the need. And that's a need that is identified by each local authority. Like, that's not just a number picked from the customs house. Each local authority now does a housing needs demand assessment for their area, which identifies what is the social housing need, what's the affordable housing need, what's the family size, what's the household size. It's really important we get that right. But Mel made a really important point as well. We need to reuse the existing housing stock that is vacant. And that housing stock, reusing that, is the fastest and most efficient way.
And we know, and Mel has talked about this before, the number of permissions you need to develop, for example, the apartment over the shop is just ridiculous here compared to our neighbours. Finally, I'll go back to you.
Right. But Pat, we've brought forward, and it's important your listeners would know this, we have changed that, and we have brought forward grants so that people who own those units can actually, and if they are reused and renovated for owner-occupiers, there's a grant of 30,000 if the property is vacant, 50,000 if it's derelict, and there's all the energy grants as well, the retrofitting grants. So there are significant
it's
funds available there.
It's still tedious to get permissions, you know, all the health and safety stuff and all the rest, and who you have to go, fire certs and all the rest. Still,
to do an extension to your home requires a planning permission. It takes effort, absolutely. But is it the fastest and most efficient way of increasing our housing stock? Absolutely.
Okay, we will leave it there. Senator Mary Fitzgerald, Fianna Fáil Senator, spokesperson on Housing, Local Government and Heritage. And before that, Mel Reynolds, architect, project manager, certified passive house designer.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.